Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet. Hey, hey, we're the monkeys, and people say we're monkeying around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down. We go where we want to, do what we like to do. The only time to get restless, there's always something new.
Yeah, that's right. We are the Monkees. This is Scared Monkees Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. And whether you're listening to us on Channel 46 and Crest Cable in Alabama, on satellite W3-957, or on the internet at scaredmonkees.com/radio, or on the podcast, wherever you can pick us up, it's very nice to have you. Tonight, with an update from Aruba. Say that three times real fast, with an update from Aruba. My truth detector there, the managing editor of Diario, Jossie Mansour. Then there's a new book out, and it's timely because I saw some breaking news come across the wire here a few minutes ago saying that Nifong will resign, the DA that was involved in the Duke lacrosse scandal, the Durham, North Carolina fiasco that went on a while ago. There's a new book out called A Rush to Injustice, and I have the authors of that book, Stephanie Good and Nader Bedoin, on with me this evening. And then, Eric Spinato, he's the president and chairman of Spinato & Associates Corporation. He was a senior television producer who worked with all three cable news networks in the States. And Eric's going to come on and talk with me about cable news coverage and how it's been going lately. Have you enjoyed that nonstop Paris Hilton coverage? I know I have. That's tonight, here on the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkees Radio. We'll be right back with Jossie Mansour from Aruba. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on the Scared Monkees Radio Network. It's always a pleasure to have Jossie Mansour on as my guest. I call him the truth detector out of Aruba. Of course, he's the managing editor of Diario. Jossie, how are you?
Pretty good, thank you.
Nice to have you back on the show. I wanted to bring you on just for a few minutes tonight to talk about the status of the Holloway investigation. There's been a lot of scuttlebutt, for lack of a better term, out there about the Dutch. Some reports are saying that they've left the island. I thought I'd bring you on tonight to clarify just what's going on.
No, the Dutch have not left the island. On the contrary, they have extended their stay here, and they've set up shop over at the Department Anti-Drugs of the police. They're studying everything that they took from the yard and the home of Paulus on the Sloot, and they're going over it meticulously. They have absolutely no idea of leaving the island for now.
Has there been any discussion, Jossie, or through your contacts, as far as other searches or other methods that the group from the Dutch may be doing?
No, there hasn't been any more searches here. I mean, they've retired to their offices to study. Remember, these are forensic people. They go over every single item that they picked up very, very carefully, and that takes a lot of time. That they will go for other searches is very probable. We contacted the authorities today, the local investigative team, and they told us, no, the case is not closed. They're working very hard on the case, both the local authorities and the Dutch forensic team.
Have there been comments regarding Texas Equisearch and Tim Miller's return, or soon-to-be return, to Aruba to do a deep water search?
I think that is very necessary because according to the indications that we follow, we think that if what happened to the girl is what we think happened to her, then we think she's in the ocean somewhere. Yes. And I think that if we could go and really look further out and at a deeper depth with specialized equipment, maybe something could be found.
The Aruban government, it's always amazing to see some of the press reports that come out. Rudy Cruz, for example, they seem to keep putting their foot in their mouths every time that they say something. Are you expecting or do you see any possibility of roadblocks being put up again by them? Or do they just look so foolish now that they best just sit back and say nothing?
They've always been foolish. The government here has not taken an active part in this investigation. As far as this case is concerned specifically, the government is lacking in activity, lacking in attention, and lacking in the real desire to see this case solved. They wanted to go away, yes, because it interferes with the island's tourism, and the population is worried about that. But I haven't seen them at all really dedicate time and effort and energy to this case.
No, I haven't seen the show, but I've seen some transcripts regarding Joran van der Sloot's appearance on the De Vries program. Can you make some comments on that?
No, I haven't seen the program either. I've read comments on the program. I mean, nothing new. Everything that comes out of his mouth is just one intent to justify himself after the other. And things that we find no justification for.
We're hearing that his book won't be published or sold in the United States, probably because there won't be a market for it and nobody will buy it. How have book sales been in Aruba?
It's very, very low. Nobody's talking about the book. Nobody's buying it. We see it lying on the shelves in the bookstores. Nobody is interested in purchasing this book.
You'd think somebody would have a birdcage somewhere that it would fit well into. Anyway, Jossie, I appreciate you coming on the program
sure.
To give us an update, and we'll stay in touch.
Sure.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. That's Jossie Mansour from Aruba. And no, the Dutch haven't left the island. They are working very hard, and let's hope it brings us some conclusions. I'm Dana Pretzer. You're listening to the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. It's always a pleasure to have Stephanie Good, the author of Exposed, and a new book called Rush to Injustice. We also have the co-author of the book Rush to Injustice, Nader Beydoun, on the line with us. Of course, we all heard about the Duke lacrosse scandal. Mike Nifong is currently in front of an ethics board right now. I think the title of the book is fantastic. It's probably, you know, the old saying, hits the nail on the head better than any other title that we could have. Good afternoon and welcome to the show, people.
Hi, Dana. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Let's talk a little bit, Nader, about the title, Rush to Injustice. I think it's the perfect title. You're a Duke alum, are you not?
I am. I attended Duke. In fact, I was an athlete at Duke. I attended Duke on a football scholarship.
Could you ever imagine, Stephanie, that when the cable news outlets started to cover this case, and we've all seen how the high-profile cases are covered today nonstop, we could do a whole show just on how nauseated I get when I see Paris Hilton on TV, but this was a different case. This had a lot to do with politics. It had a lot to do with ego. It had a lot to do with a rush to injustice or a rush to judgment. And let's talk about this case itself, and then we'll get into the book. What the heck went wrong right from the beginning?
Right. Dana, I'm sorry, but I'm not sure what exactly your question is. Do you want me to just start with how it all transpired from the beginning?
That's perfect.
Okay. The guys from the lacrosse team don't have the opportunity to leave the campus over spring break because they have to be there for practices, and so they had a party, and they invited two strippers to dance for them, and one of these strippers alleged that she was raped at the party. Nothing had happened, in fact, at all, and that is what is coming out in the wash now, but it was a long, involved process for these three boys who were accused of raping her. And the main issue here was that they had, it was like all the planets lined up in favor of prosecution. Mm-hmm. The police sergeant that was the lead investigator in the case had it in for Duke students. Statistically, you know, you could see that he always came down a lot harder on Duke students than on the local kids. And the prosecutor was looking to run for election, and he knew that he needed the African-American vote in order to win his election. And so he latched onto this case a lot sooner than a normal prosecutor would have. And it just took on a life of its own, mainly because we had an African-American alleged victim and three white Duke athletes, and people just grabbed that up, and it became a media frenzy.
Nader, I'm just looking at some of the press that's come out here about your book, and it talks about how you expose the political pandering of the district attorney and his neglect of crucial evidence. Both of you are veteran attorneys. I'm a veteran police officer, and when you look at the evidence and the neglect and the investigation, it just makes you shake your head and wonder how it ever went as far as it did. Let's talk a little bit about that political pandering of Mr. Nifong.
Well, Dana, Mike Nifong is a career prosecutor. He's been in the DA's office in Durham County most of his life, and he was an assistant in that office for most of that time. He was appointed to the head job when the then the DA was appointed to a judgeship, so somebody needed to fill that role. This was a couple of years ago. Mr. Nifong, at that time, there was a lady that worked with him in that office, one of the other prosecutors. Her name was Freda Black. She didn't get along. The two of them didn't get along at all. Mr. Nifong fired her. She went out into private practice, and she decided at some point she was going to run against him in the upcoming election.
Mm-hmm.
In the election, with the upcoming election, Mr. Nifong knew that he had to win, because if he didn't win, she would win, and if she won, she would fire him.
Wow.
So his job was at stake, and more importantly, his pension was about to, he needed a couple more years for his pension to vest. So if he lost his job, he would lose his pension. So he had a lot at stake personally. He determined that he needed a high percentage of the black vote in order to win the election. And everything he did, if you look back at all the statements that he made, this case just kind of fell in his lap. And we'll get into the evidence in a minute. He knew there was very, very little, that it was a very shaky case from the very beginning. But he saw this as an opportunity and seized it to pander to the black vote. He made strong condemning statements to the media that was there, and there was lots of it, about the guilt of the boys and the fact that this was a race-motivated crime and that there were ugly racial slurs made during a violent gang rape. It was, all he did was just pour lots of gasoline on a media fire that was already festering.
Let's talk about the media a little bit and how they were complicit in this whole case, because you're right, he took it to the media, they ran with it. Isn't quality investigative reporting just that, where you investigate, or do you just take what the DA brings to you, run with it, and see how it explodes at the end? Because if it bleeds, it leads. Let's comment about that media complicity. Nader.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, Dana, it's one thing just to report. There were people that were just reporting what Mike Nifong was saying. It's one thing to say that, and then they can report whatever goes on. But there was a large segment of the media early on in this case that didn't just report. They took what he said and then took a couple more steps and took it over the top and just condemned these kids. There were people writing, reporters writing articles about how horrible this was and how guilty these people are. And it was just horrible condemning articles about these kids. And this is, basically this is partly, this is why we chose the title, because everybody, the media, the police, the district attorney, people at the school administration, everybody was rushing to condemn these kids without giving them a fair opportunity or waiting to see what the evidence was, at least.
Let's look at both sides of the plate, Stephanie. The description of your book, again, it's called A Rush to Injustice, Rowdy Party, Booze, Boys, and a Stripper, and After a Wild Night of Living It Up, Charges of Assault and Rape. How do you deal with that in the book as far as, of course, we have to look at reality here. These are young guys, again, cooped up in a university. They had a party, but that party went wrong. How do you deal with that? Well, they should have never had the stripper there. They should have never had that rowdy party or the booze.
Well, that's true. They shouldn't have. But, the punishment here doesn't equal the crime. They shouldn't have been dragged through the mud. And let's face it, if this girl hadn't said anything, this party would have gone unnoticed. So the behavior of these boys is really fairly normal for college kids. This is not unheard of. It's very common on many college campuses.
Exactly.
Having underage alcohol. We all know that kids drink underage, and a lot of kids do. A lot of parties do have strippers. It's not the best behavior to have, but it was taken way out of proportion under the circumstances, and we lay that all out in the book. We explain that. We're fair about the whole thing. We don't just side with the boys that everything they did was okay, but we want to keep it in the proper perspective. This is what was helping to condemn them, was the fact that they had underage drinking and the fact that they hired strippers. People were using that and taking that and running with it and painting these boys as though they were just sexists and racists and just horrible kids who could get away with anything because their parents had a lot of money. And it just was not a fair portrayal of the situation at all.
And fed by the media, for sure. If you're just tuning in, Nader Baydoun and our Stephanie Good are here, and they're talking about their new book, A Rush to Injustice. Let's get to the evidence, or lack thereof, Nader. A police officer attends a crime. The police officer gathers evidence, whether it's witness evidence, forensic evidence, testimony, eyewitness testimony, whatever. You put it's like a puzzle. I don't need to tell you to this, but we're sharing this with the audience. You put the puzzle together, and maybe not all the pieces fit, but you try to get as much as you can before you present it to a prosecutor or a DA. What went wrong? What was the evidence or lack thereof?
Well, early on, I mean, obviously, you know, you've got somebody who is accusing somebody of rape. You take the statement of the accuser. You go with that first, as you know. The accuser, this is an accuser that changed her story, gave several different versions of the story early on in the case. There were red flags early on all over the place. First, she said she was raped by 20 guys.
Right.
Then she said 5. Then she said 2. Then, after being shown her third photo lineup, which was tainted, by the way, which was illegal. They didn't follow proper procedure on these photo lineups. But the first two photo lineups, she didn't identify anybody. And finally, in the third photo lineup, she identified 4 people, although she said 3 had raped her.
Jeez.
You know, I mean, that right there ought to give any investigator, any police officer, you know, a clue that there's nothing here. There's something really wrong with what she's saying. What's interesting, and what's come out in the Mike Nifong trial, you know, he's being tried in North Carolina at a disciplinary hearing now for his misconduct in this case.
Right.
A couple of days ago, the investigating officers took the stand, and one of them, a fellow by the name of Ben Hyman, testified that when they first met with Nifong to tell him what they had found in this case, they told him these things. They not only told him that she had changed her story several times, they told him that she had a criminal background, that she had serious psychological problems, she had a history of psychological problems, and she had done this once before. She had accused 3 people of raping her once before falsely. So there was all that in the beginning for Mike Nifong. And by the way, one of these police officers stated that in the meeting, when they told him all this stuff, Mr. Nifong responded with we're effed. In other words, you know, I'm not going to say it on the air,
right,
but
exactly.
We're screwed, basically, he said.
Exactly.
So he knew how bad the case was early on, and in spite of that, he steps out and he gets in front of the media and he says all of these outrageous statements, makes all these outrageous statements about how guilty the boys are. This is one of the worst things that's ever happened. This is one of the worst things he's ever seen. This was racially motivated. And, you know, it's just, you know, the evidence is pretty clear that Mr. Nifong just took this and ran with it and did it out of selfish reasons.
Well, for sure. And
hard whatsoever.
We all have to wonder how starstruck he was at the same time. Stephanie, the school, we saw the boys and we saw them, I'll use the term crucified. Did the school, the administrators, back them up, or did they just basically leave them out to dry?
They definitely left them out to dry. They just never, they did not treat them as innocent until proven guilty, which is the proper way to treat people just in general. But now these students were in their care, you know, and these were very fine students, very good kids, very good athletes. They had wonderful reputations, wonderful backgrounds. There was no real history of any problems with them at school. And so, you know, under the circumstances, and the boys did go to the president of the university and sit down with him and talk to him and unequivocally told him that nothing at all had happened at the party. And they was just ignored. They were suspended. 2 of them were suspended and sent home. The 3rd one had graduated. He had graduated just the day before his indictment, actually, David Evans. But the other 2 were suspended and sent home. And the team was suspended. The coach was fired. It was really a rush to injustice. It really was. The school just did not back them up in any way.
Was it a panic of liability for the school to, oh, my God, look, we got to get rid of these people or do something without looking at all the facts?
I think it was a panic of keeping up appearances to the public. In fact, we know for a fact that one person in particular, a member of the Board of Trustees, didn't want the team to be playing anymore because he didn't want the general public to see the kids out there having fun while a case like this was going on.
Nader, this has been a disaster right from the get-go, and in a minute I want you to tell me what's going on with the boys today. But we have to look at the future now. We have to look at victims of crime, how this put the victims of crime rights and the way of handling things and what they need to say on the back burner, so to speak. It took that aside, and it made everybody look really stupid, right down from the so-called victim, the investigators, the DA, the school. The boys were crucified. This is terrible. What can we do to make sure and fix this and make sure it doesn't happen again?
Well, I think that, you know, sometimes, Dana, sometimes something this awful, sometimes something this bad, this horrific, needs to happen before we address things that have been needing to be addressed. And there are several things. You can start with the criminal justice system in North Carolina, and certainly in Durham, North Carolina. They have some the way they do things there, the way the police department operates. The grand jury system that they have there is unbelievable. When we were investigating this case, we discovered that in the grand jury, a prosecutor can take a case to the grand jury in North Carolina, and there's no record of it whatsoever. So they can say anything and do anything.
Jeez.
There's no record of it.
Wow.
There's no transcript. There's no recording. There's nothing.
Wow.
Which was astonishing to me. That needs to change. The way the school handled the situation deserves a lot of attention. We need to take a good hard look at the people we hire to teach our kids.
Yeah.
Number one. And we need to take a look at our administrators.
Yeah.
You know, this what Duke University, the administrators, demonstrated in the way they handled this thing was a total lack of leadership. You know, when, they buckled in the face of just pressure and political correctness. Rather than doing the right thing, they were doing what they thought would give them would help them avoid any criticism by the media or people that were howling for the scalps of these kids. It was just very disappointing to me the way that came down. And also, I think as a society as a whole, we need to take a hard look at how we view circumstances that involve race. I think the extreme political correctness that in this case just overrode everything, and that drove us to a situation that drove the people that were involved into basically reverse discrimination.
Yeah.
You know, discrimination is an ugly, ugly thing, regardless of who's involved, and it should cut both ways.
Absolutely, and again, my segue into the question was the victim, and because of the bungling and the whole screw-up in this investigation, my concern are for future victims and them looking at this because it was so widely publicized and saying, I don't want to go through something like that. I don't want to be the one that gets put on trial. And it took victims' rights and sewered it, especially in Durham, North Carolina. Stephanie, what are the boys doing today?
Well, from what I understand, David Evans has accepted a position on Wall Street.
Good for him.
Reed Seligman is going to be attending Brown University. I'm not quite sure what Colin Finnerty has decided to do, but it looks like these boys are just going to be moving on with their lives now, thankfully, now that the charges have been dropped.
Nader, you're a Duke alum. Has Duke overcome this, and will it continue to be the great school that it is?
I think Duke will be a great school regardless, but it's going to take some time, I think, to overcome this. I think the administration, this current administration, is not going to overcome it. We need some changes. some changes need to be made at the top at Duke University. I'm convinced of that. Rather than acknowledging that they may have mishandled things and apologizing for it and apologizing to these kids, President Broadhead and others in the administration at Duke University have pretty much just gone on a rehabilitation tour talking to alumni and attempting to justify what they did. And that's just very disappointing to me. A university, the administrators, the leaders at a university need to treat the kids like their own.
Right.
And they certainly didn't do that in this case, because that's not how you treat your own kids.
Well, schools should be a family, and we've seen a lot, especially in the media lately, that colleges across the United States and Canada have been failing at that, and they need to smarten up. The book is A Rush to Injustice: High Power, Prejudice, Racism, and Political Correctness Overshadow Truth and Justice in the Duke Lacrosse Rape Case, available at Amazon and your fine bookstore. Nader Baydoun and R. Stephanie Good, thank you for joining me. Just stay on the line with me, and we'll be right back here on the Dana Pretzer Show.
And what we didn't know at the time we were recording that interview is that Mike Nagfong has said he will resign. Of course, the book is A Rush to Injustice, and you can actually click right on the link at scaredmonkeys.com. That's scaredmonkeys.com. You'll see the link to buy that book. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. You can hear us on Channel 46, Trust Cable in Alabama, on satellite W3957. Of course, it's scaredmonkeys.com/radio, live or on the podcast or wherever else you can pick us up. We'll be right back.
You know why? Why you and I will by and by no true love ways. Sometimes we'll sigh, sometimes we'll cry, and we'll know why. Just you and I.
Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. My go-to guy for all things cable news, entertainment-wise and news-wise, is Eric Spinotto. He's the president of a media consulting firm called Spinotto and Associates Corporation. He was a senior television producer who worked with all three cable news networks in the United States, and we've had him on before, and it's nice to have him back. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Dana.
Nice to have you back on the show. Let's talk about cable news. We're doing a segment tonight on, or I've done a segment tonight on the Mike Nifong disaster down in Duke, at the Duke University and Durham, North Carolina. And one of the questions that my first guests and I went through were the media involvement in this case and how, in my opinion, Mike Nifong used the media. And the media used Mike Nifong. I consider investigative reporting just that. You investigate rather than just take whatever you're told, run with it, and the old, if it bleeds, it leads, and figure out the rest of the consequences after. Your thoughts, sir?
Look, he came out. When a prosecutor comes out and lays down the case in front of, you know, for the media, not only do you have to go a little bit what he says, but of course there's only two sides of the story, and then the defense attorneys
right.
will come out and say what they said. But you have to remember, he is a prosecutor, and he came out adamantly saying that these boys are guilty, and so that was pretty good, you know, prosecutors mm-hmm. saying that, but that doesn't mean every old prosecutor thinks everyone is always guilty, otherwise they don't get an indictment. But the point is,
that's true.
Once the defense attorney started coming forward, poking holes in the prosecutor's story, okay, and there's the media, in my opinion, they were presenting a balance to the story. But again, what just made this an interesting story was, you know, the DA standing by his words, obviously giving an idea of, you know, you haven't heard all the evidence. Remember, you know, the release of the DNA results was not out, you know, testimony. Also, the defense, you know, the boys did not have attorneys in the first, you know, I believe, first week or so. So we really couldn't hear from their perspective. But once the defense attorneys came forward and they came out swinging, and honestly, I think that was the best thing they did, because they hired some good guys
right.
that just started poking holes into Nifong's story, and then therefore it's just immediately, you know, it's their job just to report what's coming out of both sides.
Yeah, exactly, and that's my point. I'm not totally attacking the media right now. I'm just trying to get a perspective from all of those involved. And you're a guy that's worked with all the cable news networks. Have you seen a change from the time when you first started working with them to now when it comes to covering high-profile cases like the Duke Lacrosse scandal?
I've seen, you know, there are certain cable networks that viewers tend to are interested more in the hard crime than the other networks. But I got to be honest here. I mean, it's a Division I school. There's an allegation of three boys, you know, raping, you know, a stripper and a stripper's friend at first.
Right.
Came forward kind of taking the victim's side. And, so I think some networks did great coverage. And then what happens is, you know, they see the next day, you know, the ratings and emails that come in saying, why didn't you cover this story? And you'll tend to notice in certain stories, you'll see other networks kind of jump on the bandwagon saying, you know what, it's a boring news day. There's a lot of layers to this story. We should be covering it because it is a legit news story.
You know, that brings me to my next question. Watching O'Reilly last night and Bernie Goldberg, who's been on my program before, and O'Reilly got into it over cable news coverage, all of a sudden we're seeing a lot of schoolyard fights. A kid gets assaulted on a school bus. And Bernie's comment to O'Reilly was interesting, saying, and it all kind of tied into the Dan Rather comments about Katie Couric here the other day. He said that all cable news seems to be tarting things up a little bit and trying to run these stories where O'Reilly came back and said, listen, we're running a 24-hour news service, and if you get a piece of tape and you think that the people might be interested, you run with it. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Listen, 24 hours of news is a beast. You know what I mean? It's a lot of hours to fill. But I got to tell you something. Everything that you see be put on a cable network is strong from top to bottom. Management makes these editorial decisions that this is a legit news story. The talent of being a journalist is, you know, finding the story and presenting it may be different. And in regarding this video, you know, in today's world, you know, the internet is the future. And there are, believe it or not, there are many parents that don't realize
yeah.
what their children are doing. And this beating that was caught on tape,
yep.
as you saw the father, he doesn't look at YouTube. He's an older man that has no reason really to look at YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? These kids are doing something, and they're entertaining themselves
yep.
by putting these, you know, horrendous things that they might be doing for thousands and millions of people to watch it. So it is a story because we're trying to say to the parents, this is happening. It's a new way of informing young kids of activities that they're doing. And I just think the cable, it's a legit news story for cable to show it, because this is what's going on. It's just that when it becomes a tape, it's reality. And I think people can't fathom to say, wow, this is actually happening in my backyard. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
So it is our job to inform the viewers of things that you necessarily don't read in your major or local papers.
A while back, there was a news story that came out that Larry King admitted that he has never used the Internet. I consider Larry King to be a genius when it comes to the style of show that he has. He lets his guests actually respond to questions. He says that if he can't ask a question with four or five words, he's not doing his job. But my point is are our hosts today, Larry King, Bill O'Reilly, etc., are they with the times? Do they understand the impact that the Internet has? For example, you and I were talking about that. Or are they just hosts and they have to have a good staff of producers to help them through that?
I got to be honest with you. I think Bill is definitely with the times. And what makes Bill really, you know, a great journalist, and obviously reflects because he has the views to reflect it,
yep,
is he asks tough questions. You know, it's one thing to ask a question, but and then when someone asks, you know, comes back and gives the answer, if there's an opening to ask another, you know, a follow-up question, and it might be a tough question, you're supposed to. That's a journalist, is to really ask tough questions. But if you're just going on, and the host is not, you know, asking you the tough questions that most people want to hear,
right,
then it's still good journalism, but it's, you can't say it's, you know, you're getting something that hasn't been said before. You know, a good question, you know, a good journalist is trying to get, you know, some things from the person that they're interviewing that hasn't been, you know, said before. You know, you mean break something new. And so I think definitely that builds with today's society, what's going on.
Oh, yeah, well, he's a class act. There's no doubt about it. Let's get into the Paris Hilton phenomena, Eric. Nonstop Paris, 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 Paris. If I see another Paris story, I think I'm going to puke. But obviously, the cable networks, even the national networks, see a reason to cover this. Let's talk about that ideology, that reason. Why in heaven's name are they making such a big issue out of someone who really isn't a big issue?
Because it's, you know, Paris is a nationally known, internationally known face. And because you have two different sides, people think she did not get a fair sentence,
yep,
and some people believe she did. So now you have people, you know, that have an opinion about a, you know, celebrity that was involved in an unfortunate, you know, crime. And the question was, did the judge go one step further and, you know, took, you know, did something to her that you necessarily wouldn't see this in New York? Because I got to be honest with you, you know, local New York, I just feel that lately tend to see a lot of California stories in the criminal, you know, justice. You just wouldn't see this necessarily in New York.
That's true, yeah.
You just wouldn't, you don't, you know, you wouldn't see a media circus like this and helicopters and media, you know, trying to push police out of the way.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is different, two different, you know, the East and West thing. But to get back to your question, you know, it is, you know, it there was layers to this. Once she had to, you know, once she was released, I mean, look, that's, you know, did the sheriff have the right to do it? And obviously the judge felt not. That is a new story. And then, you know, the circus, as you called it, is because, you know, then she was sent back.
Mm-hmm.
So it just goes, you know, again, as a lot of analysts were saying, it's a black eye to the justice system, the people that want to believe in it. But it is, a legitimate news story. And honestly, again, the viewers or readers and papers, they like this. They, you know, they want to hear more.
Right.
They want to hear more behind the scenes. How did it get to this point? So when the readers or the viewers are interested, yeah, I mean, you know, you have, it is a legit news story. You do think about what you know, what you want to report on. If they're going to buy your paper or watch your television set.
Well, it's a public's fascination, that's for sure. Tell us a little bit about Spinato and Associates.
Well, it's just, you know, it's a new company that I formed. That there's you know, over the years I met so many people that told me I should go into business for myself. I mean, I have an eye and nose for news, And on top of it, I like to spot talent. And I know, you know, the proper people to put on the air, and there's a lot of people don't know how to get on the air, you know, to advertise their company. Also, you know, crisis management, you know, because I'm the media, I know what we want and think. Mm-hmm. I think it benefits a lot of people to hire someone like me, because, again, I know what we want to think as a producer, and I just think I can, you know, help along to raise the profile and the credibility of the potential clients I might sign up.
Last show I had Bob Peters, who's the president of Morality and Media, on, and we were talking about media and codes of conduct vis-a-vis the satellite radio networks like XM and Sirius, the Howard Stern, Opie and Anthony, Don Imus sorts of things that we've seen here lately. Just before I let you go, Eric, your thoughts on where media has been. Has a lot of these situations been overhyped, or have the folks in media, some of these shock jocks or whatever you want to call them, is it starting to get out of control?
It's a tough question, but the point is, the days that we live in now with the internet, with satellite radio, you know, with blogging, you know, journalism has gone to a different medium. Absolutely. There is a little more freedom of speech. But at the same time, you know, satellite radio, it is what it is. You're allowed to do and say what you want.
Right.
That's why Howard Stern made a great decision in doing what he did.
Didn't he? Yeah.
And honestly, it gives choices to people of what they want to do for their source of information. For the ones that want to still watch, you know, nightly newscasts, you'll have those, you know, people, but obviously you saw a lot of them have been, you know, lost. Why there's so many areas to other, you know, other source of information, the internet, cable, satellite, and, you know, say people have a lot of choices, and I just think it's a little part of it, it's entertainment too. And the shock jocks, I mean, that's what they are. They're shock jocks. They're entitled to do that. If you want to listen to it, you listen to it. If not, shut it off.
Yeah, that's the truth. Eric Spinato, thank you. Just stay on the line with me, though, please. We'll be right back here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. A call-in number, or a crawl-in number, whatever you want to call it tonight. 306-842-7884, 306-842-7884. We've got about 10, 12 minutes left in the program. Again, these programs are recorded, archived, and available for you for podcasting, replay, or whatever you want to call it, by going to scaredmonkeys.com/radio. That's scaredmonkeys.com/radio. There you can pick up past shows, daily commentaries, listen live, or do whatever you would like to do while you're there. 306-842-7884. 306-842-7884. You know, I do agree with Eric Spinato as far as the coverage, because the people want, believe it or not, they want to see some of this coverage. But, you know, how important is it to learn that Paris Hilton isn't, you know, believe it or not, and I think I did a daily commentary on it, I started to feel sorry for Paris Hilton. She, because of her celebrity, was being bounced around, and it became a peeing match between the sheriff, Lee Baca, the judge, the lawyers, and everyone. And here's this rich, spoiled kid, you know. She may be 25, 26 years old, but she's a rich, spoiled kid who's getting bounced around because she was dumb, did a DUI, and then got caught driving on a suspended license or whatever it was. I don't really care. Had to do some jail time, and regardless of whether the jail time was excessive or not, I got tired of the hype on that. She was sentenced to the jail time. You know, it's unusual in California, I guess, for judges to sentence people to jail. You know, get a 45 or a 30-day sentence, serve 3 or 4 or 5 days, and then get out. What's the purpose? What's the purpose? Unless there's some kind of deterrent. And you go and you redo the crime. But this young girl, this young lady has been just stretched every which way possible through this nightmare of litigation as far as her crime and whether or not the sheriff had authority to put her on electronic monitoring and all this sort of stuff. I think she's got about 10 days left to 10 days left to serve, and it's going to be, I don't know. It's going to be something else. Again, this is Scared Monkeys Radio, and you are on the air. Hello, sir.
Dana, it's Red. How are you doing this evening?
You know, I'm doing good. I'm feeling bad a little bit. I think in my interview with Jossie Mansour, I'll have to go back in the tape that I said I would buy Joran van der Sloot's book just to put on the bottom of my birdcage. Now, my birdcage is too good for that book, so I want to make that totally clear. I wouldn't buy the book for the birdcage. I would buy the book for my fireplace. You know, in the cold Canadian winters, I may need it for, you know, a little bit of, what's that term, kindling. So I want to make that perfectly clear. How's the head monkey tonight?
it's been quite a long week. But yet, I feel the, whether it's a birdcage, my shredder needs practice.
Absolutely.
So often.
Absolutely. Now, was I dreaming, or did I hear right that that book will not be sold in the States?
I'm sorry, it will not what? You broke up for 1 second, Dana.
Did I hear right that his book will not be sold in the States?
What's the point?
Yeah, exactly.
Is it really worth shipping it from wherever to the United States? I mean, except for, you know, 5 people on a particular site that we won't mention, you know, who's really going to buy it? I mean,
well, I know.
It's pretty much, you know, thanks to some great people online, they've translated much of it already. So who really needs to, why would you buy Wise?
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone, you know, if he wanted to really get his word out, and why would you write a book when you could have just made your comments and your statements? And, you know, why does a book go completely against statements that were made?
Do sociopaths have to have that, ego, so they know that people out there may buy the book, or they may think that people are going to line up to buy the book? Is a person like that just so out to lunch that they live in that fantasy land?
Dana, I actually think they probably do, because, I mean, we actually owe a debt of gratitude to Joran van der Sloot for, in many respects, keeping the story going.
Yeah.
Because of his own ego, because of his own sociopathic tendencies. I mean, in many respects, if he did not travel to the United States and do the interviews with ABC, if he did not do the book, if he did not do much of this stuff, you know, the media would not have covered it. It would not have drawn the attention, you know, good or bad. But in many respects, because he feels the need to play, you know, whether he is the victim or, you know, get his, you know, he doesn't want his 15 minutes of fame. He wants, you know, his hour to 2 hours of fame. I mean, he does it at his own expense.
Yep.
And I think he's going to do it to his own detriment because he's not making any friends. We've made the comment from the beginning, what's good for Joran van der Sloot is not good for Aruba. And the more he talks, the more he flaunts what he did. It is the whole O.J. Simpson scenario.
Yep.
People really get insulted. You know, people still to this day come up to me and say, I cannot believe the story is still going on. I mean, it's people that don't always follow the story as closely as, you know, the people on Scared Monkeys, the people on the blogs, but they still know that and are actually appalled by the fact that this story never had a conclusion. Nothing was ever done to any of the three main suspects, and that in itself is the reason why tourism in Aruba suffers like it does. And the people of Aruba, I mean, unfortunately, the face of their tourism are these three suspects. And the cloud hangs over that island over 2 years later. And until they do something about it, until there's some form of justice brought, it's never going to get any better. And to be honest with you, until they do some form of justice, that's when the clock starts ticking that the tourism might come back. Not that it will come back. It might come back. And if they don't think so, they can call up Jamaica and ask them how their tourism went after they had their PR nightmare.
Absolutely. And for those of you that may be thinking about buying Joran's book, you would be able to get more literary substance from Curious George Goes to the Circus. So stick with the Curious George books and stay away from your hands.
It may have the same pictures in it, too, Dan.
Yeah, the man with the big red hat, isn't it? I know, it's the man with the, or it's the cop with the big gut, isn't it?
It's actually... It borders on insanity when
yeah.
you really think about it. I mean, it's like a really bad B movie
yep.
when you think that this guy actually writes a book about this. And as so many people have tried to say that other people have tried to profit off of this, you know, off of Natalie's situation, you know, here's a guy that is trying to.
Yeah.
And doing so in, you know, such a fictional point of view where you really, you know, the toughest thing in finding Joran's book would be, where in God's name would you look for it in the bookstore? you know, is there a section between fiction and nonfiction, or is there a section that goes beyond fiction?
Nice.
That's where it would be.
Yeah.
We've always jokingly said that if Joran was ever to write a book, he would have to do it in DVD form that would have different outcomes in different scenarios. It would almost be a choose as you go along a video game because he's changed the story so many times.
Yeah, has he ever? I'm feeling sorry for Paris Hilton. You know, I never thought I would say that, but she has been the Gumby. And for those of you that don't remember Gumby, you won't know what the heck I'm talking about, of the justice system in California. She's a young, spoiled brat who thought that she was above the law and got taken to task for it, and good for the judge for sentencing her the way that he did. But it just shows the ineptitude and the craziness of that whole California court system.
Does this mean I can't put up my Save Paris sign?
all three people showed up for that, didn't they?
I mean, Dana, I mean, I've spoken to, you know, Eric Spinato. I have enjoyed my conversations with him immensely. He's very informative about, and to talk about the news and stuff. And I don't always disagree with him.
Uh-huh.
I have to this evening, only because the Paris Hiltons of the world, people follow them, not because people, I don't think it's because people have a fascination for them. I think it's just the opposite. I think it's because the media puts it out there that people develop the fascination because they don't know anything any better because nothing else is presented to them. However, I would say something totally different with the people that actually deal with the internet and have flocked to the internet. That's the, you know, here's the wake-up call to the media, whether you be print or video. The reason why people have gone away from you, the reason why people don't spend the ad money anymore in newspapers, in magazines, on TV, is because they're tired of these stories. They're tired of the nonsensical BS that goes on with these stories. It's not news that Paris Hilton moves from one, from one jail to another. It is the only news that this story truly is the pathetic commentary that a rich multimillionaire who has done nothing in her life except be born into a family and never be told the word no winds up in a situation like she does, where she actually gets preferential treatment while the rest of society gets treated like dirt. That's the only news story here. And the idea that, you know, she claims she learns her lesson. She claims this, she claims that. You know what, Paris, I will say to you right now, you truly mean it. You've got millions of dollars behind you. Why don't you make a donation to Texas EquiSearch so they can help find missing children as opposed to helping find your spoiled brat PR?
Yep.
I mean, that's the reality of this stuff. These people have so much money that they can do so much good with, and all they do is nothing. They get rewarded for behaving badly. And as I heard on the radio the other day, Paris Hilton now has a gig with the Hard Rock Cafe when she gets out that she's going to get paid $800,000 for a get-out-of-jail party for Paris Hilton.
Jeez.
Did you get your invitation, Dana? No. I didn't get mine yet.
Mine must still be in the mail.
I mean, you know, maybe crossing the border, it got a little, the U.S. mail's a little delayed. But it's that kind of insanity that, you know, you just look at this and say to yourself, there are so many worthy stories out there. And you know what we've learned, and you've heard it, and we've talked about it so often, people care about what happens to other people. You know, is there a segment of the population that wants to read, you know, the National Enquirer? You know, sure there is. But, you know, but it's more so done because we don't get the real substance stories. We get Paris Hilton. We get Bill O'Reilly doing it, which he has no business doing, Paris Hilton. The guy should be above it, but they do it for ratings. You know, the Sean Hannitys of the world, they do it for ratings. They should be doing other stories, and that's what their expertise is. And instead we get, you know, poor Paris Hilton, she's distraught, she's emotional, it's like, well, why shouldn't she be? For the first time in her life, she was told no, and somebody meant it. I guess I'd be a basket case, too.
You're right, sir. Thanks for calling.
Take care, Dana.
Take care.
It's always a pleasure. You have a great weekend.
Okay, bye-bye. That's the Chief Banana from Scared Monkeys Red. My name's Dana Pretzer. I hope you've enjoyed our show. Remember, scaredmonkeys.com/radio. About an hour or so from now, or maybe tomorrow morning, you should be able to pick up the podcast. Thank you to my guests, and we'll see you all real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio.